mend your speech a little, lest it mar your fortunes. Words. They're our most powerful tool. You can share your greatest ideas, your most intimate feelings, but they can also wreak havoc, intentionally or otherwise. So, are you paying enough attention to the language that you use? I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the So What from BCG.
It's not about being a word snob, even though I self-admittedly probably am one. It's not about feeling as though you've got intellectual superiority over somebody because of vocabulary. It's about choosing the right word.
Today I'm talking to Ashley Rice, CEO and a Managing Director of Bright House Consulting, a BCG company.
He boldly states it to the room, a thought refined. First offered quietly, then boom. Repeated loudly, now it blooms. Nods of assent, they're all aligned. I shake my head, my face bemused, his thoughts acknowledged as sublime. I like it too, as it was mine. Language has always been a really important part, I think, of my identity. I was a big reader when I was a kid. I learned to read young because my sister forced me to play school at home. And I always kind of thought that language and words were a superpower. It's something that I loved. It's something that I like to be able to use and to flex. It's something my good friends tease me about occasionally. And it's something that as I grow older, you start to sometimes lose the ability to pull out just the right word in the exact moment. And so it's like it's joyful, but also has a little bit of nostalgia to it. In this particular poem, it's a little snarky, but the reason it's like that is because it talks about this concept of having somebody take your voice and take your language. And what they're really doing when they do that is they're taking your identity. And then sometimes they express it really well, but then sometimes they express it with a different intent. And then it's like then a foreign concept to you. So that idea of wanting to hold on to that identity through those words and the way that you express your wonder and ideas is incredibly important to me, and it always has been.
Firstly, Ashley, thank you so much for reading out your poem. I have to say, this is a first for the Say What, having a published poet on, so it's very exciting for me. But apart from mansplaining, how else does language manifest itself in your role? Those aha moments, if you like, where you acknowledge it, where you understand its importance, where it has resonance for you in your job. Those moments where companies really need to get it right, so do, and some that fail hugely.
So I help companies find purpose for a living. That's what I do. And ultimately, when you are doing that, what you're trying to do is take the concept of their ethos and marry it to their future aspiration and set a goal for who they want to be, what they will live up to, in a very pithy phrase that is memorable and deep and unique. In this way, words are the currency that we use to deliver our work. They couldn't be more important here if we tried. And so it is kind of how we immerse ourselves every day in terms of bringing to life business and strategic intent and the idea of making movement and change in companies. It all comes through words for us.
Actually, words can create movement and change. They can convey great ideas, our passions, our thoughts, but they can tear them down as well. Get the language wrong, get the context wrong. Even if you mean it as a joke, you can destroy your business. And the famous example that comes to my mind, the most obvious example, is perhaps that of Gerald Ratner, the former chairman of Britain's at one time largest jewellery chain, describing one of its products as, I think I can say this, total crap, quote. And essentially he brought down the whole operation with those two ill-chosen words. So apart from describing your goods as rubbish, never advisable thing to do, what are some of the most common, less blatant, though no less important mistakes that you see companies make?
I think the most common mistake that I see an executive, in this case, let's say a CEO, believes in the power of the purpose work, for example, or the vision of the company, but they don't make it personal in the way that they convey it to the employees, to the market, to all the different stakeholders that have to find value in it and understand what will be done with it. So we are always telling executives, you need to make this personal. You need to understand the story that you're going to tell as a human, because people want to see authenticity in their leaders. And that is a combination of strategy and empathy. And that sense of empathy often comes through how one expresses themselves. And so you really need to think about what words do I use as a leader, as an individual, why is it so important in business to really push beyond the boundaries of this normalized language, this lingo that we speak? I think it's important because using our vocabulary to its fullest, it increases wonder, it increases expression, and then this creates value by reaching different people differently and by spurring imagination. I really do think that imagination and this concept of wonder can lead us to resulting innovation that sometimes we cut off when we use our language in a really narrow way. And I also think that language can help push this empathy-driven culture of trust that as we continue to be digitized and working remotely, and we continue to be globalized, that's an important piece of creating value in business.
Now, Ashley, you are, I think it's fair to say, a bit of a word snob. Indeed, I think you have admitted to me that before. If you haven't, then I'm very sorry. Yes, thank goodness. You did say you're a bit of a word snob. So it's not just about using everyday language, the common vernacular, but a specific type of language. But isn't there a danger with that we exclude a lot of people from the conversation, creating a barrier between the I use the good language from the Ivy League schools, I use the Queen's English, and you don't?
So it's not about being a word snob, even though I'll self-admittedly probably am one. It's not about the two-point words or looking important or you know, feeling as though you've got intellectual superiority over somebody because of vocabulary. It's about choosing the right word and having the amount of words in your toolbox so that you know which ones will actually break through and mean something to somebody's heart as well as their mind.
So I was reading an article in The Economist a couple of weeks ago that was highly critical of a certain company's mission statement. I won't name the company, but having read the statement, I can see why. Now, it used some good words, some big words, but put them together and it was nonsense. Guff, I think the journalist called it. You must see this a lot in business. Pretty words, no real meaning about what your aim is.
We do. And in fact, a lot of the work that we do is to help companies use the beauty of eloquence to be able to express what they do. In fact, half of the work I do always begins with, there is a difference between a purpose statement and a vision statement and a mission statement. They have different intentions. They need to be expressed differently, but yet they also must be complementary. And everybody within that organization knows how to use them. So when you do have an empty statement, if what you do every day is not within that mission in an inspiring way to the people that work for you, it's not effective. It's almost worse to have a bad one than to not have one at all.
So if you were advising a company to write their mission statement, for example, how would you go about doing that? Give me three ways that a company could start looking to use the right language to convey what their purpose really is in an authentic way. Now, we spoke on this podcast previously to Sarah Willersdorf about high fashion and the metaverse, but she highlighted that what mattered most to Gen Z consumers was authenticity of brand. So how can you convey that with the right words?
First way, I think you start from your ethos. You go back into your organization and you understand fundamentally who you are, what is in the company DNA, because that will always be at the core of the work you do really well, of the way that you can create impact. The second way would be to consider your tone. Every company will have a tone of voice. Is it a jovial tone? Is it a very straight-laced and directive tone? Is it one that has a little bit of humor to it? How do you think about that? How casual is it? How formal is it? Having a consistent tone is incredibly important because people always know what you're trying to convey. If you're thoughtful and consistent about it, it creates kind of a red thread through language, if you will. And I think the third thing would be to focus on uniqueness. There's so much jargon in business that all of us slip into all the time. I'm guilty of this. I had a client call me on it recently. Too much jargon. And I had to go back and look at the Zoom recording and say, why did they say that? And I listened to it to pick out those words because that kind of blithe, that glibness, I don't want that. That concept of really getting to what makes you unique and not being afraid to use all of your words. I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine I hold in very high esteem. His name is Martin Reeves at Boston Consulting Group. And Martin and I were having a discussion about how we don't use the word beautiful enough in business and how the idea of a strategy being gorgeous is something you never hear, but actually can be incredibly true, right? The idea of something being splendid or magnificent or multiplicative, like all these words we don't use, but really lend themselves well to differentiation and uniqueness in that moment. So I think don't be afraid to use words that other people don't use, but that describe you really well. I think that will get you far.
I'm smiling, Ashley, because my conversations are liberally sprinkled with gems such as splendid, marvelous, fabulous. I'm not sure if that's because I'm British and they sound like words from the books I would read as a child, but there you go. I do want to ask you about social media. I certainly don't believe it is a universal evil. I'm not in that camp. But in terms of language, what do you think that it is doing to the language that we use offline too? I don't want to get Orwellian here and talk about doublespeak, but you can see where that's going. The way in which we're able to express ourselves, the quality of debate.
One thing I will say on the positive side is that social media has helped people become succinct, whether one likes what they are saying or not. We're starting to get to the point, right? And that's a lot like poetry. There's such a small space. There's so many, I don't want to say rules, because I think that's a little old school, but there's so much formatting or thought that goes into the certain types, right? You have to be incredibly choosy about the words that you put in there. And there's something to be said about being succinct. You know, that whole concept of, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one. There's that. That can be a good thing. I do think that, you know, on the other side, you are also setting up some kind of barriers generationally in terms of people understanding acronyms and just words that the other generation simply doesn't understand. I know I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old.
It's a different sort of jargon, isn't it?
Completely. It's their own jargon. And it gives them great latitude to do the teenage eye roll and say, you simply don't understand what I'm saying. And I'll say, yes, figuratively and literally. I do not understand what you're saying. But for those generations, they're creating a vernacular that has a sense of belonging to it. That's what that is. And so there are good parts about it and bad parts about it, right? It does cause discussion in our household over dinner time. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? So in some ways, I think it can be good and bad.
I agree. It's not one way or the other. But in terms of businesses, it is certainly rocky terrain. One, to get the language right, for it to be engaging and relevant. Otherwise, why on earth are you in that space in the first place? But also the substance of what you say. Now, this is an issue on or offline, but notably online. We exist in a world of cancel culture, of no platforming. I'm wondering if you think this is having a chilling effect on the way that we communicate in expressing our authenticity. We're told to be genuine, we're told to be authentic, but only in so much as it conforms with the mores of the day.
It's very true. You know, I was having a conversation yesterday very specifically about this under the umbrella of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We were going through a training, frankly. And one of the comments that I was making about it was so much progress happens in micro conversations, right? That in the moment discussion where someone teaches you a lesson or gives feedback or you have an aha, an epiphany. And if we're scared to have those conversational moments, I think there's a lot of momentum lost there. I was telling a story about how I was describing something and a really good African-American friend of mine said, hey, you don't know, but Black women really hate it when you describe something like that. I said, why? It was meant to be complimentary. She said, I know you. I know your intention, but let me tell you why. And she took that moment to educate me on that particular word, which was loaded and I didn't know. It was the word articulate, right? To me, as a white privileged woman, It didn't have a load. And to her, it did. And she took a moment to explain that cultural nuance to me. And I will forever be grateful for her doing that. But those micro conversations changed how I approach my own language in a way that was a big learning point for me. That was a blind spot I didn't see. If we don't allow ourselves to use words that are uncomfortable and to have those small conversations in the moment, we will forever be stuck in this hamster wheel of, you know, lack of change. And I don't want that for us. I don't want that for anybody.
Those small conversations in the moment are tough though, aren't they? Choosing the right words to say something that could be a cause of conflict, we hate it. But this is something that we all need to do, isn't it? Personally and professionally, get good at saying those things that may make ourselves and our listener uncomfortable and unhappy. But that ultimately need to be said if we're going to grow and we're going to progress. And I quoted from King Lear at the start, calling on his daughter to shower him with words of affection. He doesn't want an authentic daughter. He wants an obsequious one. But in the current climate, Are we to become masters of that glib and oily art? Are we to become sycophants, frightened to say anything that's going to offend anyone or may get us into trouble?
I agree. There's this woman, Francesca Gino, who is a behavioral scientist. I believe she teaches at Harvard Business School. And she made this comment around conformity gives us comfort. But there is something to be said about the kind of progress one makes when they are in discomfort, which is something as human beings, we are terrible at doing. We try to move forward. We either flee or we fight. But having those kind of uncomfortable conversations and using all the words we can to describe what we mean, to show our intention, to try to express empathy, we need to have those in order to really keep that conversation moving. So I do have those conversations a lot as part of my work with CEOs in various locations, in various ways, in various industries, talking about the role that words play. And so I think that being uncomfortable is a really important part of the human experience and one that we perhaps don't embrace as much as we should.
I'm wondering about when you speak to people who don't share your mother tongue. Now, I know this from my own personal experience, my other half is Spanish, how something seemingly innocuous, just words or comments, can be taken in completely the wrong way. How do you bridge that divide in your career?
It's very true. You slide into it. I think everyone naturally slides into it because they like to belong, right? From the days when we were in caves, you had to belong with everybody else. And if they moved without you and you were alone, you died. So everybody constantly wants to create that group. For those that know me and listen to me a lot, you can tell I've worked for a British company because I will use words like chuffed or brilliant or one of my favorite, blagging. I love that word. I think it's an incredibly good word for exactly what's happening in that moment. You know, but there are words that I have used in English in the British context, which do not mean the same thing.
Pants.
Right? And it was
pants in America don't mean the same thing in England, by the way.
They simply do not. Yes,
no,
they simply do not.
Lots of
they
words
create
like
a
that,
whole visual. The concept of fanny pack in America is just simply not the same, right? You know, there are things like that. See what I mean? I have made that mistake. Part of that too is creating a cultural connection that is just simply human. You know, right now, for example, I am taking French lessons at 47. It is near impossible to cram French into my brain. I am trying for lots of reasons. I have an office in Paris, and when I go to Paris to be with the team, clearly they're all speaking English for me. It's beautifully done. They make my life easy when I am there, but I try really hard when I'm there culturally to speak as much French as I can. It's a disaster. All the folks with whom I speak are thoughtful about it, but I'm trying to make connection through word. And I think that intention goes a long way, even if the accent is just horrendous.
I'm glad we're having a bit of a joke with this and a bit of a laugh, because actually I do want to focus on the joy of language, and used well, what it can communicate can be such positive things. And I know you've got another poem and I'm desperate for you to read it out to us. So the joy, let's focus on the joy and the comedy and the beauty and how splendid language could be, because it will make me really chuffed to hear you talk about that.
I love it. All right. This is not published work. This is menial beginning work, but I was laughing about
exclusive
the
exclusive BCG podcast.
Exclusive. Yeah. You're right. Now I'm feeling very important. It's an exclusive. And I was joking about, you know, the fact that consulting bingo exists. Do you know this? Right? You have the board, and if you really want to during a long call, you can chuck off the words you hear. So I wrote this little thing called Death by Jargon. Dull Zoom. Let's play bingo. With consulting lingo, we'll listen for paradigm shifts, agile and best practice, synergistic action, win-wins, decks and benchmarks and GIFs. Manage up, then top down, running, I'll hit the ground, while whiteboarding key attributes. 30,000 feet high, a sea change clouds my why, obscuring the low-hanging fruit. Now, new action plans drafted prove quite value-added, assuming we sidestep scope creep. We'll drill down on pipelines, find green fields and landmines. Bingo! My engagement's complete.
Ashley, fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thisowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.